I woke up, I felt amazing, I felt fabulous. So I set me up an ensemble that was indicative of how I felt. So I went off to work. I work at Broadmead in Timonium. It's a retirement village. I used to deliver food to on my golf cart to the old people. I love my job. So when I was at my job that day, it was over. One of my friends, Brian, he came to me. He was like, "Man, you look fabulous, man. What's going on with you?" I was like, "Well, I'm thinking about going out." And he was like, "Man, it's too dangerous. It's New Year's Eve. There's a lot of guns, a lot of crazy people, man. You need to just stay home." And I was like, "Well, I probably am. I'm just going to stay home, maybe call one of my lady friends, and we just chill out and relax." And so I was about to leave work, and my stepfather, he came to pick me up. And so I jumped in the car, and he was like, "Well, what you doing tonight? It's New Year's." And I was like, "Well, I'm just going home." He was like, "Man, why you ain't out with your cousin?" I was like, "You know, I'm just chilling." He was like, "Man, you should see what's up with him." I was like, I don't even have a phone to call him. He was like, "There's a payphone." I was like, "I don't have a quarter." He was like, "Here's a quarter." So I go over there and call him. I say, "Yo, Van, what's up, man?" I was like, "What you doing?" He's like, "I'm about to go out." I was like, "Don't go out." And he's like, "Nah, I'm going out." And I was like, "Y'all just stay in the house." He's like, "Nah, man, I'm going out tonight." I was like, "Look, just stay there. I'll be there in a minute." So I get to his house. I say, "Yo, you should just stay in the house." He's like, "Nah, I'm going out." So I'm like, "All right, I'm going with you." So it's me, Van, my man Jay Money, and Corey, he's driving. So we get to the club. I mean, it's fabulous. The ladies, they love us. Everything's, you know, it's just a great time, you know. We just having a great time. My man Corey, he has to leave early because he has to go to work. So I'm like, "All right, we just catch a cab home." So it gets about like 3 o'clock. They want to stay longer. They want to stay to like 6. I'm like, "Look, man, I've been at work for 8 hours. I need to go home and go to sleep, so we got to leave." And so I'm kind of like the ad hoc leader, so I kind of force us to leave. They're a little upset, but they listen to me anyway. So we go outside. We at the club Hammer Jacks, if you know. So when you leave Hammer Jacks, it's like subterranean or something. And you have to, like, come up some steps to get to Hamburg Street. So we come up these steps to Hamburg Street, and there's a bridge. So on the bridge, you know, some ladies and some guys. And, you know, we really not paying no mind. We just kind of walking to go catch a cab. I like to walk over to cross the Camden Yards to go to Pratt Street to catch a cab. So before we get off the bridge, you know, my man Jay Money, he's kind of mad at me. So he's in front of me, and he's walking ahead. And then Van, he's behind me because he's kind of distracted by, you know, the girls that's on the bridge. And I'm just focused on catching the cab. So as we're walking, it's a late model car pulls up. Some guys jump out. And I'm not really paying no mind. I'm not, you know, too afraid of anybody. So I'm just thinking if we keep moving, it won't be a problem. So when one of the guys jump out the car, he goes straight to my man Jay Money that's in front of me and says, "Yo, you got a problem with me?" And so I guess Jay Money, he's so mad at me that I made us leave the club that he's not even thinking about what this guy said. So he just keeps walking. And so as I notice this conflict kind of arising, I look back at my cousin Van. He's chilling with some girls on the bridge. He's surrounded by like 3 girls. So he has no idea what's happening. So I kind of turn back to see what the guy's doing. The car's right next to me that he jumps out of. And he turns to the driver and says, "Yo, give me a gun so I can shoot this nigga." And so in my head, I'm like, "Damn. Like, yo, I can run. I could do a couple things in this situation." But I'm like, "Well, if I take on the situation, then maybe no nothing to happen." You know, so when the guy approaches me, he says, "You got a problem with me?" I put my hands up, total surrender. And I'm basically letting him know, anything you want, I'll give you. But in this case, he doesn't kind of cooperate. You know, anybody who wants something, if you cooperate, they're just going to take it and leave. But he wanted more than that, you know. So, like he said, he wanted to shoot me. So he went to go throw me to the ground and kind of, like, rough me up. And in my neighborhood, a lot of people, they just go out hunting at night. You know, they could be a young guy just trying to get a reputation. So, you know, they say, "Well, I shot this person," or "I did this." And then it gives them, you know, a certain type of rep in the neighborhood. So I felt like I was the target for one of those type of situations. So I pulled out, you know, I was able to overpower the young man, and then I just whipped his ass. I mean, I whipped his ass like I was his grandfather. I beat him from one end of the street to the other, and I dropped him in the street. And once I dropped him in the street, the other guys that was with him, it was 4 guys all together. So 2 of them jumped out, and stepped to me, and we started fighting. And so for every one punch they would give me, I would give them two or three. So I was kind of accustomed to fighting more than one person at one time. So, you know, it wasn't really a big deal. But, you know, so as I was handling these guys, a third guy jumped in. And, you know, I kind of was dealing with all three of them. But instead of punching, he kicked me. I wasn't ready for that. So when he kicked me in the stomach, I kind of dropped my guard, and it just left my face open. They pummeled me. They beat me to the ground. They beat me up respectfully. You know, they didn't beat me up in a way where, you know, it was something bad. I just kind of got a little dizzy. And so as I was getting myself together off the ground, the first guy who I beat up, he came back to me, and he like whispered in my ear, and he said, "You got anything else I can take from you?" And I basically was like, "Man, fuck you." And I was about to whip his ass again. So as I was getting up, you know how you're getting off the ground, and you kind of put your arm up to kind of balance yourself. So I didn't even realize it, but he started shooting. And he shot me in the hand, shot my finger off. They put it back on pretty good. Big up to Shock Trauma. But then as I started to get up more, like as I rose up more, he shot me in the heart. He shot me in what's called the pericardial window. Went across my diaphragm, through my liver and out my kidney. I really still didn't feel it. I was just bent on whipping this guy's ass. So as I got straight to my feet and I felt like I could grab him, he was still shooting. And he shot me above the belly button, which hit me in what's called the L1 vertebrae, which is your lumbar spine, which caused me to be paralyzed. I didn't realize it at that exact second. And so I'm reaching for the guy like I can't grab him. Like he's right in front of me and I can't grab him. He was really intense. He was pulling the trigger and he kept pulling it. He didn't have any more bullets, but he kept pulling that trigger because I guess it was just an intense situation for him. So as I was realizing I couldn't grab him, he started to relax and he smiled at me and he walked away so calm. And I was like, I was just so frustrated. I was like, yo, why can't I grab this guy? And he just went off to the right. And as he went off, I looked at my legs. And when I looked at my legs, my body just jackknifed into the gutter and I dropped. And so my cousin Van, he ran over to me. And he was like, yo, get up so we can run. And I was like, I can't run. I'm paralyzed. And so when I said that, it was like somebody threw his face looked like a plate glass window getting broke with a brick. The way it just kind of like shattered. So at that moment, I got into the role of being who I really am. You know, I like to comfort my people. I like to take care of my family. So it wasn't even about me. I just wanted to make sure he was okay. So I was just like, look, man, it's no big deal. You know, sometimes you die in the gut at 18, and that's just how it is. But everything's going to be all right. And I said, yo, make sure my mother knows that I love her. And make sure my family knows that I love her. Then I grabbed him, and I said, yo, make sure my mother know that I said I loved her before I died. And I basically was explaining to him I'm getting tired and it was time for me to go to sleep. You know, this time came, it was January 1st. It was extremely cold outside. And I just laid my face on the gutter. If you know anything about Hamburg Street, Hamburg Bridge, you know, it comes right kind of right off of 295, right where the casino is. And when I was laying there, I looked out and, you know, I saw some cars riding past. And I kind of thought the cars would just keep going. And at the same time, I had this thought, you know, because I didn't believe in God at the time. At least I told myself I didn't believe in God. But I said that if I was disappointed in how my life was ending, then whoever gave me my life would be pretty much disappointed. And so I said a prayer that was very simple. And it was that it'd be nice if you sent somebody to come pick me up. And one of those cars that I saw, one of them just busted right and came straight to me. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, what the hell is, like how does that happen like that? And so, because I was just thinking I was going to die. So as the car came to me, I heard the guy jump out the car. People was asking, like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to save him. And then he turned to my cousin. He said, help me so I can pick him up. And so they both picked me up, put me in the front seat, and he had like a little car, like a Honda, like a Toyota or something. I can't remember. It was a small little car. But we jumped in, And we started to ride, and as we was riding, I had this like this well of energy, just this life came through me again. Like I felt like I was gonna die 1 second, but then I knew I was gonna live. And as I felt this life come through me, it just was like an eruption of emotion. And I just grabbed the guy's ceiling and I just ripped the whole, like the visors and the rear view mirror. I ripped all that stuff down just in one motion. Like I was just screaming and just like I just felt the life coming back into me. And as we was riding the shock trauma, I started to hyperventilate. My cousin tried to give me CPR, and it was like the guy that was driving, he was like, "Leave him alone, you're killing him." And so we roll up into the ambulance bay, and they both jump out and run into the hospital, and I try to open the door to get out, and I just fall into the ground. And so when I fall into the ground, you know, all the nurses and stuff come out, and they grab me, and instantly they start to take scissors and cut my clothes, and I'm like, man, this is a great outfit. How the hell is you gonna, like, I look amazing tonight. Like, wow, that's my favorite belt, you know? And so when I started laughing, you know, I really knew I was gonna live. And so, like, from that point, I was just buck neck, and they threw me on a gurney. And I remember just not being able to breathe, but then this guy came with two scalpels and just hit me in my chest. Bam, just hit me right on the side of my chest to let the oxygen, I guess they let the air out. And they put the oxygen on my face, and I was like, man, yo, oxygen is a great drug. Like, seriously, like you feel no pain when you need oxygen. So they rushed me into the ER. My cousin, he ran, and he was covered with blood, and they like, man, you got to get out of here. So they finally pushed him out the elevator, and we went up to the ER, and I heard the anesthesiologist say, good night. And I just went to sleep, and I woke up, and I was alive. And it wasn't a dream, it wasn't fake, it was something that really happened. And I was like, wow, man, that was amazing. So some years later, probably about 15 years later, I'm over at Whole Foods over at Harbor East, and I'm trying to get something off the shelf. And so as I'm getting something off the shelf, some guy says, hey, can I help you out? And so at that point, yo, my body just, I feel this overwhelming fear. Like, I want to jump over the whole aisle. Like, I don't know. Like, why do I fear this guy? And so he starts to talk to me about Jesus, and he wants to proselyze me, and he wants to, you know, he's telling me all these things about, you know, coming to his church and all this and that. But for some reason, I can't hear anything he's saying. I'm just in my mind thinking, like, yo, where do I know this guy from? Like, why? Where do I know him from? And so as I'm like, piercing and trying to look into his eyes to see who he is, he just breaks character and says, yo, why are you looking at me like that? And then I realized, yo, this is the guy that shot me. And I just say, no reason. And then I leave. And that's it.